The Lowdown Chronicles. Meet your maker.
So welcome to the latest episode of Lowdown's podcast series Meet Your Maker, and with me today is none other than Matthias Modica.
Hello, Sven.
Hello there. Great to have you here.
Thank you for the invitation.
Great you're back.
Yeah.
How's life treating you now that COVID seems to be like yesterday's thing?
Till now, knock on wood, me and also the whole label team is healthy, didn't get any viruses. Yes, yes, knock, knock, knock. And if that stays like this, then we are happy that we surfed the corona wave in a positive way.
Yeah. How did you experience last year? Then basically, like, it seems like that the whole music industry basically all of a sudden like came to a stop.
I mean, we run two labels, basically, and one is quite big, and the Teutonics label. And with that, we used to do almost 3 to 4 big events a month in all about Europe. But one residency we had in Berlin at Griesmühle. And then we did parties in London, Paris, everything. Of course, with Corona, we had to cut that. And that was a big loss, because that's somehow the stage where people can feel what we do musically, where we can show. And that was erased. But somehow we were quite lucky, because people stream a lot when they stay at home. And it seems that a lot of the music that we release is not just for dancing, but people like to listen to that at home, because our streaming rates went up like crazy.
That's strange in a way, right? Because, I mean, like, the music, especially on Teutonics, like, isn't necessarily designed for, you know, having, like, a proper listen in your living room or whatever.
I mean, Teutonics is a label that started as a DJ label, as a dance label. But in the last 2-3 years, it made some new evolutions, and we're releasing actually 50% like song-based electronic music. It's always dance-y, it's always disco-ish or housey, but it has a much more listening factor than usual techno music. You know, our music is based on chords and melodies and harmonies, and so maybe that helps that people like to listen to that.
So would you say it's a new form of contemporary pop, what you're doing?
That's one of the ideas behind that. I mean, if you go through the history of dance music, if you go to the history of pop music, you know that most pop music basically started as a dance music.
True.
You know, rock and roll or waltz even. You go back 200 years, the pop music of the Vienna in the late 19th century was the waltz, which was a dance, you know, and the Charleston, the whatever. And so every form of pop music comes from a dance subculture, and that's what we're doing too. We're turning funky, very musical-orientated house and disco music sometimes into a more popish and consumable thing. I mean, some of the tracks that come out, not only on my label, if you get the DJ version, it has to be like intros, outros, you know, 6 minutes, so you can mix it. But if you cut all that and you just keep the musical element, you know, then you, number one, you see if this is really music or if it's just a tool. We are in a tool city here. Berlin is a tool city, because most dance music here is like tool-based, which is not it's not about saying if it's good or bad, but that's the reality.
No.
And then if you cut down a Nina Kravitz track, there's not much music, basically, because it works differently. So our music and the scene that we are part of, that's basically just growing and starting to exist, because the label we do, it used to be quite alone the last years, but now we see more and more labels coming out like this. So here we try to combine the musicality of the people. Most people producing for us, they play instruments, they sing, they learned. Yesterday we released a record of Ethel Whippet. They studied at Goldsmith College. One studied art, the other music production. They know, they play instruments. And so most of the people on our labels, they come from music. They know what music is in terms of playing chords, melodies, rhythms, history. And then they turn their knowledge into a dance track that sometimes then in 6 minute version you have a, you know, you have a DJ tool. If you cut it down for Spotify, for example, mm-hmm. it becomes an in-between thing that you, as you said, it starts as a dance track, but it could become pop. And yeah. that's what we're aiming for.
But what you just mentioned, basically, like this this kind of formula, like it seems to be that this rings true from early Gommag days till the Toytonic days of now.
Yeah.
Basically, like that it was always very essential for you, like the people you put out, that it's not tool music. It's basically, it's much more, it's like musically rich.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a person who came into dance music, but I'm coming from, I studied jazz piano. I come from a musician's family where every day you talk and you listen to the most craziest forms of music, from Stockhausen to Wagner, from Art Blakey to like a very big cosmos. And if you grow up like this with like a very big music cosmos, it's very difficult to concentrate on just one thing, you know?
That is true.
Yeah. And the dance music world, basically the last 25 years, because that was like, now we are on the biggest peak of electronic dance music. But as you and me know, as we are a little bit older, not 20, we know where it started, in some bunkers in Berlin and Detroit, maybe, where some outsiders went and they didn't even know if they're going to survive that night. Yeah,
very true. Yeah.
yeah. But that was 30 years ago. Yeah. Now we are in 2020 and now the whole school class goes to a rave and the teacher comes with them, you know, which is a great thing also. But it arrived on a very big point. So, and me and my friends, we're a little bit different, because when something becomes like a law, you know, it becomes like an existing formula or too big, then we get a bit bored, you know,
yeah.
then we want something new. And so we're always looking about the stuff in between, you know, we're looking for the musician who's in between the scenes, you know, not the one who tries to jump on a existing style or vibe. And with my old label Goma, that already was happening. So we tried to make a label that was focused not just on music, but also on image, on art, on doing magazines and exhibitions. And also the musicians were more in between, like whatever, Peaches or James Murphy
yeah.
or Who Made Two, or even the Ramelzy that we produced. That was people who
right,
were in
right.
between.
Yeah.
yeah? And that's something that is in my DNA, and the people working with me are same there. We want to change stuff. We don't want to jump on something existing. And to finish this with electronic dance music, especially techno, house, whatever, we are after 25 years in a point where you have all these existing styles and subgenres. And it's easy. You just choose one. You can download the sounds to do a minimal techno track or a rave track or an EDM track. You can get this in 2 days. You have all the things. You download them, and then you can do a track in one of these popular styles and maybe make a career out of it. But for us, on Toytonics, on Cryptox, or on the old label Goma, that was not what we aimed for.
Yeah.
We wanted to be the opposite, trying to find new things.
Yeah. Would you say that what you just mentioned about like your musical upbringing, you know, like you learned the jazz piano and stuff, and back then with Goma, even though it was a label that functioned a little bit differently, but was still aiming for the dance floor. But would you say like now with Cryptox that basically that you've come full circle in terms of, you know, like your own musical upbringing?
Yeah, for me personally, as you mentioned, I played piano and played in bands before getting into the DJ life. It's a circle. Mm-hmm. But it's a circle. I wouldn't have done that like 10 years ago, because 10 years ago, the jazz thing and the live music thing, it felt not right. So 10 years ago, it was...
Why is that? What changed?
It's very difficult to say. It changed a lot of things. Maybe one of the reasons... Now, in 2021, as we said before, electronic dance music is the thing, and not just since 2 years, but since 20 years. 80%, don't take me by this number, of the music people listen all over the world is electronic, or it's techno, house, EDM, or it's trap. And most hip-hop trap of our days is not the 90s traps looking for rare samples. Wow, I found a vinyl that nobody knows and I can do something. And you have a syncopated, very Afro-American, funky beat. But a lot of the trap you hear our days in Germany, in Romania, in Italy, whatever, every country has the biggest scene, is a bit more, is very electronic, because that's the thing. So in 2021, let's say 80% of the music consumed is electronic. So me looking for something new thinks, okay, well, then the freshest thing is like fucking hell, five guys going in a room playing and mixing styles, you know. And not just me feels like this, but as you know, as a music journalist since 3-4 years in the UK, in the US, you have a huge new band revival.
Definitely,
among the under 25-year-olds. Yeah? It didn't arrive to the charts, probably. I'm not looking at the charts, but I'm quite sure it's not there yet. But you see, in all terms, London, the UK jazz thing, it's massive.
It's big.
I mean, I remember seeing an ID magazine already 2 years ago. They were doing a 20-page story. I mean, and somebody looking at these guys, they don't look like jazz musicians, you know. They look like that's hip-hop, that's good style, and that's young, and there's energy there. And I see an energy in this new life thing that I saw in the electronic scene in the 90s when I was going to school, and it was, wow, different, and try out and do something different. Hey, so I, for me and for my people, and it seems a lot of in the UK and America, but also in France and Japan, you feel this. There's new bands coming up. There's looking people looking to a combination of electronic and real playing. And one other theory, I mean, there's many, but one other theory is the most of the electronic music you can make this without having learned anything about music making.
That's a fact.
A lot of the people doing electronic music, house, hip-hop, whatever, have a big talent and they create something beautiful, and I loved it. But it's a different thing to produce a techno track. You download your things from machine or whatever. We are native instruments. Like we are in Berlin. This is the town where they produce a lot of these tools to make American EDM. That it's here. But so you don't have to learn anything. You don't need to know what is a Dreiklang, whatever is the English word. You don't need to know what is a scale or why a note relates to another one or what is a good singer and not or how to create emotion through harmonical chord progression. You don't need this because it's different. But now after 30 years, we are that's the massive thing. So maybe the fresh thing is doing music with some knowledge. Yeah. If it is, that's like we can discuss about that. But somehow, you know, looking to the other side of that, there's this playing together and being free of doing music.
Yeah, it's kind of this kind of interaction which was really missing over the last years.
I mean, you're a house, techno, whatever producer, it's a very solitaire thing. You stay at home with your laptop or your MPC. Maybe you have a friend, but normally it's like a one-person thing.
Yeah.
But the band is a band. It's five people coming together, jamming. You don't know what's coming out. The sounds can, it's not, So I think it feels well in 2021 to make music also in a group with other people and trying to build something instead of being alone at home or as a DJ staying 20 meters over the crowd.
would you say, like, with this kind of new scene and what you're doing, like, with the Cryptox label, that this is specifically targeting like an audience which, let's say, like is our age, like which has knowledge about music, which has knowledge about like electronic music and dance music, and is just like tired of the same old tools? Or is it also targeting like a young audience which basically is used to this kind of what I call like pop cultural singularity, where everything is cool at the very same time, that they don't differ anymore between this is a pop track, this is a techno track, this is dub?
I mean, the second thing you said is very, very interesting, especially for a 40-year-old guy, you know, where you see, fucking hell, it's all on the same time. It's not anymore in a... Yeah, and is this true that it's in the same time? Because it's very hard to see, you know, because I think there's still trends and things that grow and things that disappear. But what you say for the age is... I'm sure that somebody over 40 who has been doing all this electronic 20 years might think that's a great thing, that more and more people do something different, bring back some musicality. But there's to say that if you go to a lot of these new jazz concerts, for example, if you see some Ezra Collective or Shabaka, all these big jazz names from the UK scene, or the, you go to a concert, I mean, most people are under 25. Yeah,
that is true.
That is true. And I had a crazy, like, that was for me one of these moments I said, fucking hell, it's not just a theory, it's really happening. Mm. When I went like 2 years ago to see Pharoah Sanders at Festsaal Kreuzberg in Berlin. Pharoah Sanders, 90-year-old legend, but legend for people of a certain age, because he didn't do like the collabo with Kanye or something, you know, to reintroduce him. Now he did with, I think, Fortet or something, but you know what I mean. I go to this concert, 70% were like young people, but people getting emotioned by that, you know, not like, okay, it's trendy, I gotta go there, let's get a beer, it's a bit boring now. No, they were into that. I went to see Shabaka here 2 years ago, 3 years at Jazz Fest Berlin. It was super, a lot of young people. Mm. It's very funny because you have a lot of under 25s and then you have these 20% over 50. Yeah, but both feeling that.
Yeah.
And we have been thinking a lot about this and talking a lot about what's happening here, you know? So I think that this demand for something different that every growing generation has, you know, it's still there. And maybe there is, it's like what I said before, that a lot of 15, 16, 17, 20, 25-year-olds, they have been seeing electronic music with their older ones. And if they grow up, they didn't see anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? So if you are 17 or 25 and you want something different or you are more open-minded, you turn into things like jazz, rock, glam rock, psychedelic, whatever it is, you know. But that's a different thing. And the other thing is that's very important, I think, for our times and a lot of people. I'm preaching this a terrible word, but to younger kids or whatever, there's a big difference. Everything is free. Yeah, it's so standard to say this. It's pathetic almost to say, hey, everything. But that is the big change. So you and me are over 40. We had to have a lot of money to get a little knowledge when we were 15. Because you had to go
it
fucking
really,
record store.
Really time-consuming.
Time-consuming, expensive, and almost impossible. If you were living in a small city with a bad radio station, you didn't have a chance to get new music, to know that there's different styles of things happening. Or getting into the history. Maybe you are lucky you listen to a great old-school hip-hop track on your local radio in 1996, and maybe you're lucky and you can somehow research where this is coming. You know what? But today, you hear a great track, you go on Insta, you go on Spotify, 3 days later, you smoke some spliffs. You know everything what other people have been learning in 3 years. No? You can go with no money. You can learn so much. And I think that a lot of kids, especially also in Corona times, they had so much time and possibilities to consume and to learn. So a lot of people are much more, have a much wider knowledge, even if they're very young. And that makes them much more curious. And that's what we are seeing on Cryptalks, that a lot of people, and only, or just, we are very small with that label because we just started, but seeing the concerts, as we said, or seeing festivals, or looking online, you know, you realize, oh, interesting, that's probably happening with these 20-year-olds, that for them, they have been at home, and they start to consume much more than the generations before. So they want much more, they're much more curious. Yeah. And they probably are getting much more bored. That's a generalization, but
that's the thing. I mean, like, when in the end it comes down to blind consumerism. It's just like, it's basically about the sheer quantity, and that you're able to have access to it. And I think it's problematic in a way, like, that there is no real context, so to speak. You know, like, that is just, no, it's just something to consume. It's like not necessarily something which you have discussions about. Mm-hmm. That's what I experience when it comes to the young lads and stuff. But you also said, like, would you say that it also helped this kind of like new enthusiasm for these kind of live things and stuff, that, you know, for many years jazz almost was like a dirty word, so to speak. And now it's like, it's very open, as it should be, as the music suggests. And also what happened here in Berlin with the X-Jazz Festival, for example, you know, it also went this direction, that they showed jazz is not this kind of fixed box. It can basically expand in any direction possible. Do you think that this now also came into the conscious mind, so to speak?
Yeah, I don't know how a 15-year-old person reacts to the word jazz today. Because everything what you said is probably more the older generations that had really probably a stinky image. Me too. Like, it became like an old man's Sunday afternoon thing. Mm. But, I mean, I use the word jazz, and we all use it maybe a little bit different. Because, like, if you would ask, whatever, Miles Davis, he hated that word.
Yeah.
Yeah? And a lot of the original, from all the level stage, didn't really like the term, because basically what they said, we are making music, Afro-American music, or music based on certain rhythms, based on certain harmonical changes, based on certain phrasing, based on dynamics. So for me, also using the word jazz means more like it's about bands, it's about open-mindedness, it's about innovation, improvisation, and about trying to find something new based on special harmonic and rhythms, you know, which are quite contrary to the quantized electronic music that is, you know, very static.
I mean, that's true.
Yeah, it's very static. It's very, we are in Berlin, that's like very marching here. It's Prussian country, you know, that's probably there's connections too, you know. The jazz thing is for me and for all of us, it's more about like you taking a word. We could have taken the word psychedelic or whatever, you know, it's like about these different things, trying to be open, not following a path, but playing together, and brings different shades of life or life and electronic combinations and stuff. That's the word. And I think, as answering your questions, the younger generation probably don't even know about what could be the old jazz.
Probably not. Yeah.
They just think, oh, cool new word, oh, cool new image, and interesting new music and fire, because what the big new jazz guys, that's fucking emotion, like real emotion. Yeah, it's not it's easy to create emotion with a pill. Yeah. Yeah, but you come to a good band, you know, the emotion get created by harmonies, by a certain kind of phrasing, by the way a bass player plays with a drummer in a homogene way, and creates like a vibe, and the chords bring you somewhere. And like Pharrell said it, Pharrell gave a great interview a year ago with Rick Rubin, saying like he's waiting for the chord progression, for that chord progression that opens his mind. I don't know exactly how he describes it, but that's like, if you're a musician, you know about these differences. Yeah, it's difficult not to go too specific, but I think that's more what young people might feel. If you go to these jazz festivals of today and you see 20-year-old people going crazy, I think they don't think about what means jazz, you know? They just see there is something different in the air, and it's inclusive, and it's driving you somewhere. And it's not programmable, you know? You go to a Sisyphus party, whatever, you know more or less the music you hear at 11, and you know already what's going to be there at 3 and at 5, you know? You go to good jazz festivals, you go without really knowing what's going to happen and where it's going to bring you. And I think this is the modern and the interesting thing, not just for me and for us, but probably also for the upgrowing generation.
Yeah. Would you say it almost feels like, now that you stated all these things about, like, you know, what you feel about, like, this kind of new jazz scene, what you're trying to do, like with Toytonics and with Cryptox, also mentioning that basically Berlin is the capital of Tool music. Are you here on a missionary, you know, level, or why? What was the main reason? Because you arrived at a point to Berlin where many people already turned their back to the city.
Where many people already turned their back to the city.
To the city, they already like. You know, they've been there like 10 years earlier, so to speak, and then left because, you know, for them it's not as good as the old days anymore.
I know exactly what you mean, because I know so many people who came here and they left. Probably many are for healthy reasons. Or,
could be. Yeah,
could be, and many did that thing. I mean, I'm not on a mission, and we have to say, we are four people at the label, on the labels, and doing all the stuff, and it's not just me alone. But we're not on a mission. Our mission is to do what we feel and what we think is great. And we are very, very lucky, because everything we started the last 3-4 years, somehow it gets people like it, you know, and we can live from it and we can grow. So the mission becomes automatically, once you start to do stuff and they work, and so you repeat them and you, you know, expand them. But I'm not an admission to anybody. Everybody can do whatever he wants. I'm happy if they like what we are doing. And not. But to answer your question with the people who went away from Berlin, I mean, Berlin was the capital for the last 15 years of the worldwide techno movement. Yeah, many people moved here for that reason. Many people moved later to copy that what the DJs before were doing. So that's how the sound of a city grows. I mean, Seattle with grunge and hardcore, Bristol with trip hop. Don't judge me for the term.
I certainly will.
Not everybody knows. Gets the joke. Yeah, but you know, this is a pop music phenomena. That is a pop music phenomena. That cities get a certain sound and they grow, and other people move to the city because they love that vibe, and they grow, make it grow till to a point where or it falls apart, yeah, and gets old, or it moves, turns into something else. So, in my little view, Berlin. Since I'm a thinking person, let's say like this. So I didn't grow up here. We are in Berlin here. I'm living here since 6 or 7 years, but I'm not from here. Been here since I left school. I come here to DJ in the late 90s. I did the different phases. And I saw that this town also has had different phases in the last 30 years. Starting with maybe even going back before we were born in the 80s or whatever, there already was a very important music scene in Berlin that was totally different of what's happening now.
Sure.
Then, for me, that was very inspirationally much more than the last 15 years, because me personally, I don't find a lot of inspirating things in the last 15 years on the electronic music scene. But I was really inspired by the late 90s till the 2010, 2008 time, when labels like Kitty Yo...
Yeah,
we're dominating the scene.
Yeah.
Yeah? When clubs like Scala and Rio, that most people that listen to this podcast won't know, but that was like really the first moment, and it was very open. Yeah? People came to town. Peaches, Gonzalez, Taylor Savy, a lot of people came to town because they wanted to be different, and they brought something different to town and created something very unique. Yeah. And that was like the DNA of the town, I think, in my view, between when I started to think and DJ and stopped school, late 90s till 2010. And then it turned into this techno city, which is great because it became a big thing and it's radical or used to be radical and interesting. And it's the normal way of a music city. Yeah? It becomes like. But the problem a little bit was that many other things went to the side. And even it created a tourism, and like that's all people who are living here, they live with that, black-dressed groups, you know, buying the clothes 1 week before they come to Berlin, you know, not getting a hotel so they can look very tired when they come home and tell their friends how hard it was. You know? I'm making jokes, but I did the same, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
I had we all had our hardcore techno lifestyle. But by now, that was the last 10, 12 years where this was the dominating thing. And it became more and more dominating. And at the end, people thought, okay, there's only that music here. It's not the reality. This is a musician's town. The last 10 years, so many musicians from all kind of scenes and worlds and countries came here. Just the dominating techno thing was a little bit hiding the other stuff. You know? But for me, asking for music as a music lover, as a music passionate, I wake up, I listen to music, I go to night, and I want to listen to new stuff every day.
Sure.
You know? So that was a little bit one-dimensional, you know? And so I'm not on a mission to change this, but I felt 5 years ago that this time is passing by and there's new times coming in this town. Also because I had so many friends starting to move to Berlin while others were leaving.
Yeah.
And the people who were starting to move were the somehow interesting people because more like, oh, let's go and see what we can do and who we meet to make something new. Huh? We can experimentate in this town because it's cheap and so. So I think that probably 3, 4, 5 years ago, it started to get another vibe, and that vibe is getting bigger and bigger. And that vibe is let's call it the individualism vibe or the originality vibe, and not the, I want to go there because I want to dance in the famous clubs to that music that I'm listening at home already. I got, you know, it's a different thing. And I think living in Neukölln, doing the Cryptox thing, doing the Toytonics thing, meeting so many people every day. Somebody wants to meet, comes to town. Hey, do you know this guy? Hey, there's this. Hey, did you see this new Keller where they're doing this kind of parties? Did you see what they're doing here? There's so much different things happening. And I think this is increasing. And I think this is getting much bigger. And I think the, for me personally, the more interesting people are now in Berlin than maybe in 2010.
All right.
Yeah, but of course, that's a big town. You know, that's my little universe, and I might be wrong, and I might have met the wrong people. But now I have to say it's a great moment because it's like, yeah, it's more wild.
What you just described about what you find here in Berlin in terms of music and the musicians, was that one of the main reasons why you left Munich? Because the vibe there wasn't the same anymore in terms of the creative scene?
No, I grew up in Munich since I was 7 or 8, and but I'm half Italian. My parents used to live in Italy, and I left Munich, I think, 14 years ago. I went to live in Marseille in South France.
The Marseille chapter, yeah.
Exactly. I was very tired of everything, and I had a lot of friends. My girlfriend in Marseille, and I went out and lived in Marseille before coming to Berlin. But Munich is a special town. It's especially in Germany, people like to speak bad about the town. Yeah, but it's I'm not here to defend Munich, but we have to say Munich was actually the most creative town for many, many years in Germany. Mm-hmm. Yeah? What Berlin is now used to be Munich in the 70s when Freddie Mercury was living there, where the biggest gay scene in Europe, they say, was in Munich, not some Berlin, where the wildest anarchic thoughts and thinkers were in Munich. And that was in the 70s with all the film scene, Fassbinder, Eichinger, a lot of the big film things were happening in Munich. The radical, like Munich disco conquered the world in the 70s, and it was not somewhere else. And then you go back to the 20s, to the 30s, you go back to König Ludwig der Zweite times, you know. König Ludwig, they were inviting all, they didn't want to make war, these kings, the India Bavaria. They were inviting Italian architects and painters to make decorations, to build. So the DNA of Munich is very important for me. And I think there's a lot of Munich spirit, old Munich spirit, in that what we are doing and trying to do original own stuff, you know, to be a little bit anarchic, you know, and giving a shit what other people think about us, you know. And because if you try to do own stuff, you're going to fail a lot of times. And people say, oh, that's not cool. Ah, see, I told you before, that's not going to work. Okay, but you know what I mean. So, and this is a bit the old Munich spirit. And I'm happy that I have this in my thing, and it's a part of the DNA.
Yeah. I mean, like when you invited me down to Munich, like for like DJing sessions and stuff, I always had the best of times. So it was always like weird that because also in that time, like people were basically, you know, like pointing their finger at Munich and go like, nothing's happening there, which obviously couldn't be further away from the truth.
Munich is a fucking party town, much more than Berlin in the history now. Mm. Of course, now it became a party town, but Berlin was, I don't want to say a war town, but if you go to history, 300 years of militaries, of wars, of dominating, of Kaiser Wilhelm, very, very Protestant, very strong, you know. Munich is a Catholic town. It's not because we are religious, but this is Catholicism is about, you know, drinking beer. You know, the fattest people in Bavaria are the priests who make the great beer, you know, and they eat. And they used to Oktoberfest, you know. That's the symbol of town of Munich is partying and getting drunk and going crazy. Making love to people that you don't know, you know, in the DNA. And of course, now it became the Google City and the Apple Town because it's changing. It's crazy now what's happening. It's so much American money coming in this town. It's killing a bit the vibe.
Yeah. I can see that. And also, like another thing, because you brought the new Toytonics magazine with you. What I always found super impressive, you know, like back in the Goma heydays, so to speak, you know, like was this. You didn't need too much to decode like that, for example, like Goma isn't about music only. You know, there was like so much more to it. There was, you know, like there was a fashion aspect. There was an art aspect to it. And I was wondering, you know, like back in the days, like with, you know, like with Mirko Borsche and with Pace and, you know, Mr. Katsoulis, was it planned from the beginning to have this kind of thing, you know, like which then culminates in exhibitions all over the world, or was that basically a very organic process?
Yeah, as you say, this Goma Records that we started in 2001, mm-hmm. something, the label before, with Mirko Borsche and Thomas Katsoulis, they were doing all the images. We were already like record digging, being in the whole nightlife, starting electronic music scene, observating everything, getting into it. And then we came to the point where we said, hey, we need to start a label now and do our own thing. But we have to do it differently. How can we do it? So in the end, we said we have to do what we love most. And I had Mirko Borsche, who some people might know is now probably one of the biggest graphists in Germany. Back then, he was working for Süddeutsche Zeitung with Thomas Katsoulis. They were graffiti guys getting into the publishing graphic design stuff. We said, hey, guys, let's go together. Let's try to make it differently. At this time, and also before, I think there was never a label doing what we started to do. Maybe labels used to do a little bit of merchandising and stuff. Maybe they did a poster or something. Mm. But we focused a lot of doing, we called it Amore poster magazine.
Exactly.
We did exhibitions in we've been to Japan with 032C magazine and Konstantin Gricic invited to show what we were doing as being not a one disciplinary gang, mm-hmm. but doing many. We did exhibition, I think, in LA, in New York, in San Francisco, in Stockholm, in different towns, which didn't have a lot to do with music, because it was more about creating a whole world. And that whole world between t-shirt design and magazines and artworks, that was always there was two ideas behind. Number one, it was with every item we wanted to try to set a new idea. I don't want to say a new trend, you know, but to propose a new idea. Mm-hmm. It can be funny, stupid. I remember doing a lot of comics, in the early Goma days, but nobody was doing comics. You know,
not
now
all.
You got this like everywhere. But I remember sitting with Mirko and Thomas, the designers, they're like, what can we do that really people will think, yeah, why? Let's do comic stuff. And they were using, but back then people were trying to be serious, you know, and you, what the fuck are you doing? You're ridiculizing your music. Said, no, fucking, you know. So that was a bit the approach. Every time with every poster, with every record, with every cover, with every t-shirt, to propose a new idea, not knowing if it's good or bad, if it's going to last or it's going to be thrown away, you know, but a little bit this. And so musically and visually, that was more or less on the same level. Mirko and Thomas were with me on the visual thing. Big discussions, like crazy shit sometimes, you know, to find, like, no, we cannot do, but it's cool. No, we cannot, because they did it already. No, okay, then we don't do it. We do the opposite, you know, this kind of. But this was a bit the idea to propose with every release a new idea, hoping that it becomes something bigger.
And now you continue basically like this, what do you... Back then, you know, it was about like planting seeds, so to speak. And now like with Toytonics, you know, there's the new Mac, and then there's a completely new generation of creatives like featured in there.
Yeah.
And also like what you're doing, for example, like with the merch for Toytonics, you know, the t-shirts and stuff, it feels like much more like a real brand, so to speak, than just like simply merch, so to speak.
Yeah. It's we started with Toytonics now since a year to work with a lot of artists, illustrators. Yeah, we started this magazine with 25 graphists in it. We do this regular artist collabo t-shirts with eBay. The last one came out, and a lot of different people. But we didn't start like this. Maybe I should turn it differently. We started the Goma label around 2001. Mm-hmm. We closed it in 2015. Yeah? We just stopped. We didn't officially close it, but... we just stopped, and more or less there we started Toytonics with a different crew. Also, Max, who's sitting here, came 2 years ago, and some other people. The thing was, with Goma, it felt a little bit old for ourselves after 15 years. Mm-hmm. We did so much stuff. We traveled the world playing Goma parties all around. We had this thing called Type, whatever, on different levels, then working with Lagerfeld, then getting the shirt made with Colette, then... all kinds of levels came. There was a moment where opportunities came. But then also labels started to to come that were obviously or somehow influenced maybe by our attitude. Yeah.
Sure.
And not one, then two, then more. And then I personally thought, like, for me, it feels a bit old now. I want to do something fresh every day. I need new things constantly because I get bored and then I stop to work anything and I end up smoking spliffs too much. Yeah, so I better give me something new. So I put. And 2015, it felt a little bit like this. We told everything, we saw everything, we did everything, and probably a lot of people who are in this new music, art, underground, street, whatever, knew us. And so it made sense to close it and to start a new thing. Teutonic started as a pure music DJ thing, but it's evolving. And in the beginning, it felt right not to do anything visually, just to do the contrary of what we did before. Mm-hmm. Yeah? But the last 2-3 years, that label grew so much, probably through Instagram, through in the social new world. We have so many followers that at a certain point we said, hey, here, Max loves art, photography stuff. All of us are somehow in this. Hey, let's start again, but differently to get not out of the pure music thing into a whole vibe thing, because basically it's a vibe. Yeah, I think it's a growing, it's a development. The label today, it's different than 3 months ago, than 7 months ago, and nobody knows how it's going to be in a year. Mm-hmm. It's going to be, but not a radical change, but it's a very flowing change now. Yeah? And somehow with all this quite big Teutonix fan base around the world and very, very like, these people, we're communicating with them through Instagram, yeah? And you see how they feel and how many people following and knowing what we do even better than ourselves. Yeah? I love these stories, like that's happening regularly, like whatever, we release a record and the next day somebody from Ecuador mails me that there's a mistake on the on the cover, yeah? And I say thank you, and he tells me, hey, and I look at his Instagram, wow, the guy has great t-shirt design. So I ask him, he tells me about his friend in San Francisco who's studying, and then you know, these things couldn't happen 20 years ago, now they're happening. And so they're giving us, like, we're seeing the results of our ideas very fast. Mm-hmm. And that gives us the confidence that, the vibe we're doing, the things we like, the people we are friend with, the people we are following, the people we are discovering, because we are all looking for new stuff all the day, that this what we like often gets liked, too, by the people who follow Teutonix. Mm-hmm. Yeah? And so it makes sense to increase this. Yeah?
Right. And what's the reason that your last release, which just came out recently, is under your own name and not under Monk?
Basically I'm a musician, but in the end, since 20 years, I'm a label maker, party organizer, a t-shirt designer, whatever, a lot of stuff. And the music is not the main thing. My own music is not the main thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah? I have more fun helping other people to make great records together and put them out and look how this grows than doing my own music. I do music every day. I play the piano at home, but it's for my own stuff. I used to do music as Munk till 2015. Mm-hmm. And I produced a lot of stuff here, the Ramelsey album, Peaches stuff, whatever, James Murphy, Midnight, you know, a lot of phenomenal hand clap band. Many bands I helped, sometimes much more, sometimes less. And I did 3 own albums. But I closed that project in 2015 because it felt like also...
It's officially done.
It's officially, the last record came out on Jennifer Cardini's Correspondent Records. Uh-huh. I think it was called I Don't Give a Fuck, something like this. I'm on it with a joint, and it said, like, okay, this is my goodbye record. I think there's a Peaking Lights remix on it. No, Secret Circuit remix and a collaboration, and Lauer did something on that record, and it felt like, okay, goodbye, punk. And I started to do a couple of records on Teutonix under the name of Capote. Which is my dance music name. And I need a little bit this because I need the different names, because somehow that was always also music made for a certain purpose, maybe. You know, I want to DJ. I want to DJ my own tracks. I love that sample. I want to make a track out of that, and I put it out as Capote. But it's, I don't know. It felt right to do an album now under my real name because it was completely different process. These tracks, they're all slow tracks, with a lot of solos on it, mm-hmm. instrumental tracks, and they have nothing to do with the club thing. They don't have, I don't know, somehow they felt free, and I thought it makes maybe sense to put it out under my name. But I mean, it's very difficult to explain certain things. You do it because you feel them.
Sure, yeah. All right. I think that should do it.
Thank you for your interest.
Thank you so much for having taken the time for having this little chit-chat with us here.
Thank you, Sven, for the invitation.
Pleasure it was, certainly, Mr. Modica. And then hopefully we see us pretty soon in Neukölln.
Absolutely.
Until then, bye.
Bye-bye. Prost.